The first time I heard that phrase, oriented times three, I was a student nurse. I was learning how to assess patients in the hospital. The phrase was used a lot, particularly at that change of shift when new nurses were coming on and we were leaving. And we would use it to describe that the patients that we were turning over. But new to healthcare, I didn't really know what it meant. Perhaps it was shorthand. You know, maybe it's shorthand for someone who is really oriented, someone who is oriented on so many levels, like they're sharp and quick and responsive, cognizant of what's going on all around him and inside, a super duper orienter, oriented times three. It was finally explained to me, no, not so much that that's not what it meant. It refers to being oriented to person, place, and time. It's a way of knowing people, how cognizant they are of their surroundings. A person who appears confused or uncertain is asked these questions. They're asked, what's your name? Do you know where you are? Can you tell me what day it is today? Pretty basic questions, but they can reveal a lot, quite frankly. So now I'm not a nurse practitioner, but I'm a minister instead. So what similar questions would I ask to determine if a person is oriented spiritually? How would you ask if you're spiritually oriented times three? Perhaps I'd ask, what's your name? Do you know who you are? Do you know whose you are? Do you know where you are? What is your place in the world and your life? In the universe. What day is it today? What time is it in your life? What is it time for? What are you living for? Today? Tomorrow? The future? Yesterday? These are not unrelated to other questions I ask in the pulpit on Sunday mornings, or at times I'm talking with individuals. We're on long nights when I'm just lying in bed, unable to sleep. What do I believe? Where do I belong? What does it all mean? Certainly, I know the questions a lot better than I know the answers. But I also know this. We have spiritual compasses inside us that help us arrive at our own answers. Sometimes we can read our compasses more easily than at other times. But we all have something that spins toward the north, an inner tug toward what is holy. And in those times when our compass is impossible to find or to read, or when it points in a direction we don't want to go, we can turn to one another, or to maps that help us get oriented, or to constellations that guide us to where we're headed. Perhaps that is what it means to be spiritually oriented times three. Oriented to self, oriented to others, and oriented to the holy in this world. Perhaps this is what we're doing here together, reading our compasses, finding our way in a universe of shining stars, and making new maps to help each other on our ways.
I invite you to rise, either with your body or with your spirit, and join in singing hymn 1003, Where Do We Come From? And this is actually written as a four-part round. We're not going to do that. But we will sing verses 1 and 3 through twice. And in fact, I think we're going to go around again after that. So Maria will play the first line through once, and then we'll start. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Mystery, mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery. Mystery, mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? mystery, mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery, mystery, mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery.
The purpose of our faith holds three components. We are here to be part of creating the beloved community. We are here to awaken ourselves to what is holy, to deepen our spiritual nature. And we are here to do our part to heal the world. The first of these two things can be done here within these church walls. We do the work of creating a beloved community when we commit ourselves to including all who come through these doors, finding ways to connect and embrace each other. We commit ourselves to treating each other with tender, loving care, to being respectful, compassionate, and attentive. And we commit ourselves to the long haul. And what I mean by that is that we don't give up and leave when we have a disagreement or something doesn't go our way. Beloved community is not easy, and it doesn't just happen. It requires real work and real commitment. And the second component of why we are here, being awakened to the holy, is done within these walls when we remind ourselves to practice noticing what is sacred in the world and in our lives. We do this in prayer, in meditation, breathing, and thoughtfulness. We do this together so that we can feel a quickening in our hearts and in our lives. And the third component of our purpose of healing our world can be and must be done here, but not by our church alone. The fact is that there are so many issues and concerns confronting us that we need each other more than ever before. And by that, I mean we need UUs across the country. There has always been an office of social witness at our national UUA offices, but this has been reshaped in the last number of years. Until about 6 years ago, there was only one full-time staff person for the National Social Witness Program. There are now around a dozen staff people who stay on top of national and local issues, who offer regular training, support, and education, and they have merged their efforts with the Side with Love campaign. The broad message, standing on the side of love, emerged as a rallying point for people of faith in the year 2004. And it was in response to what was going on in Massachusetts during their early efforts for fully inclusive marriage. And later that same year, during the effort to keep the marriage equality law and block Proposition 8 in California. The current Standing on the Side of Love campaign was launched in the 2008 shooting at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee, which was targeted because they were welcoming to the LGBTQ people and they have a liberal stance on so many issues. The Knoxville community did not respond with hatred and anger. They responded with an outpouring of love that inspired the leadership at the Unitarian Universalist Association to respond with the goal of harnessing love's power to challenge exclusion, oppression, and violence based on sexual orientation, gender identity, immigration status, race, religion, or any other identity. Since its inception, Standing on the Side of Love has received feedback from disability rights activists within the Unitarian Universalism about the exclusionary and ableist language of standing. Pushed forward by responsive resolution at the General Assembly in 2017, the shift was made to be called now Side with Love. Since the recent merger of the justice efforts acknowledging the need for national leadership, there's a greater awareness that we cannot afford to be focused on single issues. This is an awareness that injustices impact people in multiple complex ways. Audre Lorde states this when she says, "There is no such thing as a single issue struggle because we do not lead single issue lives." I'm going to say that again because I love it. There is no such thing as a single issue struggle because we do not lead single issue lives. The four intersectional justice priorities of the Side with Love office are climate justice. The staff with climate justice organize Unitarian Universalists to advance a just and equitable transition to a clean energy future. Through spiritual grounding and nourishment, political education, skill building, leadership development, and mobilization, they facilitate shared learning, mutual support, and collective action that is also inclusive of Indigenous sovereignty and climate resilience. The specific campaign associated with this is the Create Climate Justice Campaign. Another is democracy and electoral justice, organizing on the state and local levels to fight for fair elections, advance voting rights, protect abortion access, and resist the targeting and criminalization of Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. This is our UU the Vote campaign. A third priority is decriminalization, which focuses on activating people of faith and conscience to resist the criminalization of our neighbors and communities and create a safer, more just, welcoming, and sustainable world. This work includes our work on racial justice and immigration justice. Our campaign for this is called Love Resists. And the fourth priority is LGBTQIA+ and gender justice, which is inclusive of reproductive justice and abortion access. The campaign associated with this work is Uplift Action. The work we do together to build a world in which all of us are free and thriving is interrelated. When we ground our spirits, grow our skills, and act strategically for justice in deep relationship with each other and our movements, we all choose to side with love.
I invite you to join me in singing hymn 1014, but we're changing out the words standing on the side of love to answering the call of love instead. The writer of the song has asked for this substitution, and we honor this request. As we sing, I invite the children and young folks to share in collecting the food that people have brought for our little free pantry. Bring those up front and place them in the food basket. Please rise. The promise of the Spirit, faith, hope, and love abide. And so every soul is blessed and made whole. The truth in our hearts is our guide. We are standing on a tide of love. Hands joined together as hearts beat as one. Emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim we are answering the call of love. Sometimes we build a barrier to keep love tightly bound, corrupted by fear, unwilling to hear, denying the beauty we found. We are answering the call of love. Hands joined together as hearts beat as one. Emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim we are answering the call of love. A bright new day is dawning when love will not divide. Reflections of grace in every embrace, fulfilling the vision divine. Answering the call of love. Hands joined together as hearts beat as one. Emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim we are answering the call of love.
Margaret, Northlake's Director of Lifespan Religious Education. And before I tell the story I'm about to tell, I want to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing in our religious education classes downstairs. This month, our theme is heritage, and so we've been talking about our spiritual ancestors, our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors. And last week, we made bracelets where we remembered with each bead the quality of those ancestors that we might want to draw down, like strength and courage. And so today, the story that I have to tell you is about Martha Sharp, who is a Unitarian. And here is our story. This is the story of how a boy found out that his Unitarian Universalist grandmother and grandfather were heroes. As an eighth grader in New York City, a boy named Artemis Jukowski III chose his grandmother to interview for a school assignment. You all may have done one of these kinds of assignments. His grandmother was named Martha Sharp. Well, telling his grandparents' story here and now is a way to pass along the question that Martha Sharp posed to Artemis throughout his life. And that question is, what are you going to do that is important in your life? So hold on to that question. On a snowy night in Prague in 1939, Martha Sharp jumped from a taxi, darted around a corner, and flattened herself into a doorway. The heels of a pursuing Gestapo agent clicked past her. She entered an unlit apartment building, dashed up five flights of stairs, and rang the bell of a known anti-Nazi leader. 6 weeks earlier, Martha and her husband, the Reverend Waitzel Sharp, had left their young children safely behind in the United States so that they could volunteer for a relief effort in Czechoslovakia, sponsored by the American Unitarian Association. Then, one night in 1939, the Nazi army marched into Prague, the capital of Czechoslovakia, and occupied the city. The helping mission that the Sharps had instantly changed into a treacherous cloak and dagger mission. That March night, a woman opened the apartment door to Martha, denying that she had ever heard of the man Martha was asking for. "I begged," Martha recounted the story later to a biographer. "I told her there was little time. I produced my American passport, and when she saw it, she said in Czech, 'A moment.' And then she snatched my passport from me, shut the door in my face." For the next few minutes, Martha frantically worried whether she'd see her passport again. Her passport was her only ticket to safety. But the door did open, and this time a man stood before her. Martha asked if he was Mr. X, as Martha later referred to him when she told the story. He said he could give Mr. X a message. She explained that she had been charged by a group of British and American refugee workers with transporting him to the British embassy so that he could be smuggled from the country. The man asked her to wait a moment, and then he disappeared into the apartment. He opened the door again, wearing an overcoat. He handed Martha her passport and said, "I am Mr. X." Just take a moment there to imagine the trust that had to be there for both sides in that moment. Together, they walked through wind and snow across the city. A Nazi soldier stopped them when they reached the bridge over the Vltava River. Martha produced her passport, confidently announced, "Americans!" They were waved across the bridge and then stopped by another soldier on the other side. The passport trick worked again. Just steps outside the British embassy, a third Gestapo officer stopped them. Martha began to loudly complain about the lack of taxis and her frustration at being late for a meeting with the embassy secretary. She flashed her passport, and she demanded that the guard tell the secretary, "Mr. and Mrs. Sharp are here." He waved them ahead to speak with a British guard, and Martha and Mr. X walked into the embassy to safety. Martha then returned to her apartment, where Waitzel was returning from a similar mission. They watched out their window as Nazi soldiers looted Prague stores and warehouses. The rescue of Mr. X is one of hundreds that the couple orchestrated, helping Jews and non-Jews, intellectuals, political leaders, writers, artists, and children flee to safety from the Nazis. Yet the heroism of Martha and Waitzel Sharp is just beginning to be recognized. And I wonder if any of you have ever heard of them before. A few, yeah. The story of the Sharps' courage illuminates some of those dilemmas that perplex people who care about social justice. How many of us want to help, but are afraid or don't know how? Taking a courageous stand does not necessarily require the sacrifices and heroics on the scale of the Sharps. It's easy to feel small in comparison to Waitzel and Martha Sharp, said the Reverend Dr. William Schultz. Not every one of us can set out for war-torn Europe, but every one of us can help those who do. In sharing his grandparents' experience, Artemis wanted their story to inspire others, not overwhelm them. Life is made of righteous moments, not grandiose moments, he says. Making choices where you reflect on how you treat everyone in your life. The key part about my grandparents wasn't just one big moment. They made thousands of little choices that led up to the story that we now tell. Artemis remembers his grandmother, Martha Sharp, asking him this question. What are you going to do that is important in your life? Even now, he's grown up, married, the father of three children, he still hears her words. As a child, Artemis always answered the same way. I'm going to overcome my disease, referring to his lifelong battle with spinal muscular atrophy, a progressive illness. Today, he has become an advocate for disability rights, and he's the author of Raising the Bar, New Horizons in Disability Sports. Telling his grandparents' story is a way to pass along to you, a new generation, you, a newer generation, the question that Martha Sharp asked him. What are you going to do that is important in your life? Thank you.
We often bring a ponderance to everything we do, including our practice of religion. But meditation times don't always need to be serious. Sometimes we can play and allow a simple joy to come into us, reminding us to smile, allowing us to feel a bit lighter, even if just for a moment. So today, we're going to practice a bubble meditation. Well, I blow bubbles here. Perhaps you can remember part of this and use this as a fun way to meditate on your own. To begin, think about an aspect of your life that you are grateful for. As I blow bubbles, reflect on that person, event, place, or opportunity, and imagine the bubble holding your gratitude. The bubble captures your gratitude and holds it for just a fragile moment. We tend to cling to a thought. There's bubbles going back there too. And if anyone wants to keep blowing these, they're welcome to. We tend to cling to a thought or an emotion, going over it for hours, days, even weeks. It is hard to stay in the present moment, but bubbles help us with this. I invite you to breathe and bring to mind something you have not been able to let go of. Perhaps it's a grief or an anxiety or a moment of hurt. And now, as we blow bubbles again, focus that energy and imagine that experience, placing it inside of the bubble. Focus your energy into that bubble. Place that grief, that anxiety, that hurt. Watch the soapy globe float and glide and pop. No bubble lasts for more than a moment. Like life, bubbles are transient. You can't hold on to them. Each bubble is like a moment in our life that floats away and pops. It reminds us that the present moment is the only point in time when we can access the power of transformation. And now, finally, are we going to blow more bubbles? Just for fun. Just for the joy of seeing their magical beauty.
Healing is possible. May it be so. Healing is happening. May it be so. We believe what we need most are the hearts of each other right now.
You never know when the moment of decision will come. Perhaps it is on the school playground when you see the class bully picking on a new victim, or standing in the checkout line at the grocery store behind a young mother whose screaming child has her at her wit's end, or at a staff forum at work when your pledge to take some unpaid leave days could help save a coworker's job.
Such moments come in different ways to each of us, but they do come. They remind us that the decisions we make in our day-to-day lives do make a difference. They point out the ongoing choices we make between standing uncomfortably on the sidelines of our messy world, unsure of what to do, and acting deliberately in small but concrete ways to help create a kinder, more compassionate reality. They return to us to the powerful truth that in critical times, it is possible to side with love by defending, supporting, and advocating for each other as if we were all equals in our humanity.
It is precisely because we live in a world which knows the evils of greed and violence and the seas of human indifference that we understand just how sacred it is when our acts of love and compassion actually triumph. And it is precisely because we live in a world which knows such triumphs that we cannot fully give up hope in our imperfect humanity.
If there is one thing that I appreciate about our Unitarian Universalists Association's invitation to siding with loves in these current times, it is that the invitation invites love as an active force in our lives. So much of our understanding of love can be passive. We talk of falling in love or of being helplessly in love. Or we assume love's automatic presence in a family or a home or a community and are shocked to learn otherwise. But I do believe that love is more than merely a power that claims us. It is also a power that we claim by choosing our response to the truths of our world.
Love is a choice. Whether we are at the bedside of a loved one dying or at the side of a stranger we have only just met, the love which inspires the courage and commitment of such choices is not a sweet or sentimental kind of love. Rather, it is a love which recognizes the greater good and the bonds of kinship of which we are a part.
But once we accept love as a choice, then we must also come to terms with where that choice leads us. This was the profound and radical insight of our Universalist forebears, that if love comes from God, then there can be no exceptions, Love cannot just be for one or some of us. If it is for any of us, it must be for all of us. Love cannot be just for those with loud voices, but also for the voiceless. Love cannot be just for those with power, but also those who are marginalized. Love cannot be just for those who still hope, but also for those who despair that help and hope will ever come.
So take a moment to reflect on this particular time in your own life, in the lives of your family and friends, and in the state of our community and our world. Who needs us to side with them in love? What moral questions does our commitment to love call us to address in the coming year? I don't have the answers, nor are the choices only mine to make, but I lift up these questions to spark a conversation as individual people who care about this world and as a community of faith, memory, and hope.
Recently, reflecting on the opportunity to stand for love, a friend of mine asked, "Why does it have to be a side? Must there always be a side?" I understand her regret. The last thing our world needs is more division. One answer might be that the call to siding with love is made in the spirit of inclusion. But I also think that we're being invited to occupy a new place or on a new side of understanding about what it means to live spiritually in our world.
Love is a choice. It is a deep, life-changing passion, not just for our hearts, but for our souls.
We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of love, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn 1056, The Hours of Religion. You are invited to take the hand of the person next to you, forming a community circle. We understand we can't all do this, so please fold your hands in front of you if you need to, and we'll hold you in the circle of our hearts. The hours of religion, which like sunshine goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love.
In the name of all that is holy, may the connections between us inspire and sustain us. May the flame of life within us and among us be a sacred reminder that we are all called to serve, to grow, to love as we continue this journey of transformation. Blessings on you all this coming week, my friends. Amen.